Celtics on the 31st of March 2019. The snow outside is still pretty deep, but at least it's beginning to thaw a bit and sink a bit, and I hope, in fact, and we all hope in this area, that we don't have too quick a thaw, because then you get flooding like crazy. Where I am in the country, you have culverts underneath roads, especially the dirt roads, and they get washed out if it's too much of a fast thaw, especially when you're in a bit of a valley. It's coming down the hills as well on both sides. But that's the way it is, and hopefully I'll be getting a bit healthier weather soon, because now it's so damp, so incredibly damp. And I think everyone around has got bronchial problems, as we all know, from different reasons, of course. I always think about the incredible geoengineering, which you can find lots of articles from the universities that are participating in the studies and so on. Even before they really started to spray, back in the 90s, they talked about the different effects it would have on humanity, with ill effects in the lungs and so on, different age groups, too young and old, and those with compromised or asthmatic systems or something. So you really are seeing it, of course, in this day and age. And it's astonishing. I mean, I remember when I was really small, pretty small, really. I mean, really small, looking at different statements that came out into newspapers. And one of them was to do with the theme. Today we'll have memes and themes, but back then it was much of a theme. And how it was to do with the politicization of medicine, for instance, as an example, where they'd have their fads. And you don't, those organizations that push themselves as being scientific really do have fads. And yet we're all getting trained to just go along with the present fads. And back then it was the same too. And when anybody back in Scotland at that time, and I'm sure most of England too, with the National Health Service, got a sore throat around the age of 4 or 5 or whatever it was, you were pretty well booked into the hospital, and you had your tonsils and your adenoids whipped out just like that. And the theory at that time was, because evolution was kicking in, you see, you know, we're just descended from the apes, and because we're walking upright instead of walking on all fours, your sinuses get blocked, you get infections, and it goes down into your throat, etc., etc. So the answer was to just whip them out. And it was the same for appendix, of course. Oh, it's a vestige left over from prehistoric times, pretty well. It's amazing how they just come out with this rubbish, you know, really. I mean, you've got no proof of anything, really, except, hey, this little gland here, or whatever, has got an infection in it. That's what you have to treat. But when it comes down, well, you don't need these things anymore, because you've evolved. And now everyone, of course, that got the problem, got them all whipped out, and your tonsils and your adenoids are very prone now to all kinds of bronchial infections, because it was one of your first lines of defense. It caught the problem, and hopefully, and most of the times, it could actually deal with it with a good immune system. It was almost like a trap, and a good chunk of your immune system was taken away when they took them out. You forget that too. But yeah, the so-called sciences go through amazing fads, and that's just the way it is with them. And when you get politicized, and so manipulative politicized events happening, and themes and all the rest of it, especially to do with control and social control and global control, and they found their enemy to bring humanity together, of course. Just they did away with the alien one that Lester B. Pearson talked about, and because that's what they're hoping for. They churned out so many sci-fis. I've been thinking about that this all week. So many sci-fis, way back in the 40s and 50s, where nobody really was into anything like that, but they churned them out like crazy, and that started to give folk the idea, well, it's maybe plausible, but they couldn't pull it off, they couldn't get the technology to simulate a full-scale invasion pretty well. And so they hit on the idea that a global warming, famine, and the like, and pestilence and plagues and so on, that would fit the bill, you see, at the Club of Rome. It's quite fascinating, because just before that, they had, in the early 60s, you had really cold weather and deep winters. We get these, this is normal, back and forth like that, it's normal. And you can get 10, 15 years of really cold winters, and it'll be a bit milder for another few years. It's up and down, you see. We're not in a clockwork universe at all. And they really banked at the time on the coming ice age. And all the big ones, they were pushing eugenics for the same group, actually, the Club of Rome. And they had Paul Ehrlich with the population bomb. That was all tied together, completely tied together. Too many people, and there'll be even more too many people down the road. Therefore, how do you deal with it now? Well, you've got to have an enemy, people are the enemy, and therefore, let's start taking over control of what people do and take away their choices of what they do, and then you can direct to the future. That's the idea. And Ehrlich's, I think it was Paul Ehrlich's wife, I think she was on the board, the actual board of the Club of Rome as well. And when that didn't pan out, then they hit upon the global warming idea. Well, that's kind of died off in the West and a lot of countries too. So it's just turned to climate change. It's just like, how's the weather today? That's good enough. That's how we're manipulated with these agendas. And there are definite agendas. And everybody involved, and I can see their point, You can see the point. Of course, everybody involved in working together and planning the future, who turned out the books on it, from eugenics all the way down to Julian Huxley at UNESCO and his brother Aldous Huxley. Aldous Huxley was quite open about the fact that was his biggest worry in the future was overpopulation. And everybody in his class and his ilk were of the same mindset, of course. Hasn't changed. And during World War II, they had a meeting in London, and the king presided at the time before he died over it. At the time, they weren't killing enough in war. Like Bertrand Russell said, you know, hasn't killed enough off. If only could have plagues every so often, it would make you the population. That's what he said, Bertrand Russell, this wonderful hero of eugenics and socialism. But folk don't stop to think what they're hearing sometimes. And many folk at the bottom actually agree with them, not realizing that just because you have a little flag that you wave for whatever party you join, it means that you're going to get spared either, because George Bernard Shaw said the same thing, didn't he? You'll have to come to us and explain why we should keep you alive when we're in control, literally. You know. So you're taking up the world's resources. Hmm? And you got all these articles, oh, each child, and statistics and so on, each child that's born will consume so much of this and that and that, and that, and so much will be necessities just to stay alive, and other ones will be not necessities, but it's what they want, and they have all these statistics, etc., what we are, we're all costing the planet. As you turn everything into what? Into energy, because that's the real currency, is energy. And that's why you're seeing all the talk about energy and cost of energy. It's also to do with everything that you need to live. Not just heat and cooling or whatever, or keeping your meat cold in the fridge, or your vegetables, whatever it happens to be. It's also to do with what you're consuming, you see. Your cost to the planet in energy terms. And that's where everything eventually, they hope. And I can see it coming. I don't think there's anything they plan, the big boys plan, or the big panels, the United Nations and UNESCO, that they cannot do. That there's, given enough time, enough propaganda, total control of the school system and for indoctrination. As Jack C. Lull said, you've got to indoctrinate the early part from early years, and then subsequent propaganda will take very well with them. They won't question it. And he was a hero, Jack C. Lull, of even Kissinger. He put out accolades about him, and he simply knew his stuff as a real philosopher, and he knew human nature, and he knew the history. And he knew how folk could be manipulated into following a certain path. It's quite easy. And all tyrants in the past have gone for the school system first. It's so imperative that you get to school and you get young children. Russell said it himself in one of his books. He says, we used to, now we, I love the we part, who's the we? We used to think we'd have to take children from the parents at birth and have the state rear them in collective nurseries, basically. And they did try that in some countries, by the way, for those who don't know that. But he said, we've found, if we get the children young enough, through scientific indoctrination, he said, then the children can go to school, they can gather indoctrination in school, come back to the home, and because of scientific indoctrination at school, any input by parents will be completely ignored. It will not take, it won't take with the child. So therefore the state can give them their culture and their belief systems and their education, and the parent will simply be an economic supporter. They'll pay for everything. That's what he said. And that's what's happened, isn't it? For those who can't stand back and see it. You understand, you don't need things to be spoken at times. As you go through it and you live through it, you take it for granted. And all the studies that show today, very few people, actually, there's even fewer and fewer people, as I say, that are actually parents, like, together, for any real length of time. But the, most of them, if there's parents there, the children go off and do their own thing as soon as they get into the home. They've all got their own internet system in their rooms, their TVs, the channels in their rooms, and so are the parents. So everybody goes and does their own thing. So true enough, the parents generally tend to be economic providers. And the state gives them their value, their new value system is drastically different from, say, grandparents. Parents now are already so far along the road that they accept the changes much quicker. It's all a formula, but it's not speculation on my part. This is from their own journals and so on I'm talking about, and psychology, etc., and behaviorism and sociology. It's all done. The piles of data, especially now with internet and constant data collection from thousands of sources, is astronomical. And it's pretty precise once they have it all in every individual, and they can predict pretty well most of the things you're going to do in life. They really can. Even the question mark factors For instance, you might have a gene that'll come to the surface and you'll go towards alcoholism, for instance, or you're really into the cannabis, and more so than other people. And don't forget, there are people that, there are addicts to different things. Some are addicted to alcohol, and some of the folk with alcohol don't even touch cannabis, vice versa, and other ones will do both. So there are addicts, and they can actually equate that into, or put into the equation, their personality types, even down to when it might hit them, and it'll affect their performance in life and so on. It's quite interesting, where everyone's categorized and put into little slots, basically. And every day, more data is added as you put up your data up online, etc. Or even if you look at different things online. I mean, they say that YouTube is one of the biggest collector of data for those who are analyzing you according to what you watch. And right down to the algorithms that decide, well, they watch this, therefore maybe they'll watch, and they keep all that stuff down the side there, expecting you to watch it. They don't really give you a choice eventually. They're deciding for you what they think you should. Well, you can imagine how they can guide you along. And when you realize, too, that even articles you look up, people who looked up this also looked at that, you're being guided along a certain path. And maybe some people think that's great, I don't know. It's trying to analyze you, and it's deciding what you might want to watch. On the other hand, it might want you to watch something else if you're being a test subject. They do have test subjects, you understand that. And test subjects don't know they're test subjects, or, as they say, that which has been experimented upon will alter what it's doing because it knows it's being observed. That's basic science. So they don't let you know if you're being experimented on. However, they could certainly send you data, couldn't they? Make you paranoid and have you follow through with some crazy data. That's true as well. And all the way you're being studied, of course. I remember years ago looking at articles put up by the Pentagon of the US, and it's, again, whatever the US does, everybody else is doing it at the same time pretty well. But they did say that they had different kinds of viruses they could send live online and alter. They actually said, and whether it's true or not, they could actually kill somebody. The idea being that, and we don't, again, it's so clever and weaponization of things, how you can study things, again, you'll take for granted and you won't think of. You take the pixels in the computer, and it said that by sending little clusters of pixels and colors and so on, they can literally break through the visual input that you have and go to different parts of the brain like a program. Just by manipulation of certain pixels, etc., to the side of your direct pupil, the center of your pupil, and things like that, and swirl them around or whatever it happens to be, and consciously you'll be kind of oblivious of it, but they say they could actually program you. And it is true that when your heart's beating, the initial beat comes, the signal for your beat comes from your brain. That's what happens in heart attack. Often in heart attack, you'll find that little nerve there to the heart gets damaged, and the signal doesn't get through, but the heart will go into automatic block. It calls it, we'll beat about 40 beats a minute to try to keep you alive. Until, you know, you can get hospitalization or whatever. Anyway, that's getting off the topic. The fact is, they claimed they could actually stop your heart in certain cases. And now I'm sure the very fact they said it, even if they hadn't done it, if they tried to do some breast beating to the rest of the world, how great they were, I'm sure that got the rest of the world motivated right away to try it. And so we'll never know if these things are successful or not. I do know, and so do the studies out there, that the internet definitely is affecting our minds, for sure. Maybe our psychology as well, like all data does. And today, we have so much data getting thrown at us. Most of it nonsense or just trivialities or even repetition. But it reminds me, actually, this week, again, of the same articles you would see when they were doing studies about television and how much television per week that children were consuming and how it was affecting their performance at school and in life in general. We know too, for instance, that the children, if they're given a lot of TV, especially unrestricted television, will throw off the old rules of social interaction and different sexual ways, for instance. And they might be more promiscuous or more hyper-addicted, in a sense, to something which is a drive. Drives like eating, well actually necessities like eating or sexual drives and so on, can be highly addictive, obviously, and hypersexualized, especially, very easy to do with a constant repetition of the same kind of things over and over and over on the brain. It's understood, and it's not healthy because, again, I'm getting off the topic, but I thought I should really say it before I do forget it. The same thing with the internet, because there's so much pornography out there on the internet, and children have access to it. If a child in the home doesn't know how to do it, somebody at school is going to show them very quickly on their iPhone or whatever it happens to be, and they all have their phones, isn't it? But you got to also remember an article I put out a few years back, and it was from a Canadian newspaper about a Canadian psychiatrist who worked with the prison inmates that have sexual problems. And he had to quit, and it's an awfully good article. And he said that the stuff they're showing the prisoners, for instance, repeat offenders on that type of sex and all kinds of things, he says affected him as well, until it's affecting his relationship in the family. And what it is, it becomes addictive to you. And you'll have these odd thoughts, they'll just jump in your head at the wrong times and dominate the rest of your thoughts for an hour, for the day, whatever it happens to be, or until perhaps you act out on them. And then it's destructive, you see. So there are certain things that all generations, going way back into the dawn of history, have always known. Certain things had to have rules, or you had chaos, personal chaos, family chaos, and even tribal chaos. They didn't have welfare systems back then. It's only recently you have any welfare system, and people were really counted on to decide what they want to do, and if they had made the wrong decisions, you took the consequences. That included male and female for pregnancy. And then, so they would get hitched up and look after the child, because the tribe didn't have, as I say, that extra welfare, so they couldn't look after extra, extra, extra. So that whole point was always pushed and promoted. And of course, mistakes will always happen, but even then, at least the tribe would often take care of them, of the effects and excess children. But everything in the past was done for a reason, naturally. If you had chaos, you'd never get out of chaos. You'd have perished long ago as a people. And basic rules develop because, and the taboos about different things develop too, because certain things are detrimental to the unit and to the tribe. Of course they are. But on television and children and the internet and so on, it truly is, especially now. the whole we're living in an era where there's so much pretense about how free we really are. Huh? But are we really? We're living in the most surveilled society that's ever existed. And it's getting worse all the time because they're putting more and more money out on more surveillance, even deeper surveillance. And any rights that you had are pretty well gone long ago because of all the stuff that's happening. And anything is left, you won't have that either. Right now, it's kind of semi-voluntary to even take out what they call loyalty cards at grocers and things like that. And look upon you as crazy now, and no time at all, a few years, and now you're crazy if you don't have one. What's wrong with you? And every other store you go into is the same thing too. So you're being nudged out of making your own decisions in order to be accepted by those around you, obviously. It's all understood by the nudge groups that I've mentioned before, that you have an international group of professors and behaviourists and psychologists working to nudge you make what they call it the right decisions about everything, including what you think about different things too, without you knowing about it. So you're going to treat all information and those little devices that bring information to you and take it away from you too, and your information away from you, you're going to treat them all very carefully. Because there's way more than you just having fun somewhere and deciding what you want to do on that machine. As I said, TV was bad enough. And TV, again, brought in, eventually towards the end especially, a very debased culture. That's what they show. I put out the links ages ago on Adam Curtis. He put awfully good documentaries out there to do with how the TV industry and radio industry in Britain, for instance, used to put out very staid, patriotic kind of stuff. And it's all really propaganda. Like Ilal said the same thing. Ilal said anything to do with police or hospitals and healthcare that you watch in a drama format is pure propaganda. To make you really believe in it all, that's what it is there for, and so on. You gotta go back to the communists. Stalin was very open about the role of the police and the role of the military that could also work alongside them. It's just to keep total power over the people. You've got to have these organizations to keep power over them. Not to control, just to control, but keep power over them. That's the reason. And he also said teachers too. You couldn't keep the system together and indoctrinate the people without getting them as children. And the teachers were awfully good. And that was really their function, was indoctrination. But all information that's put out there for little documentaries and entertainment by the BBC at one time was pure propaganda. And Curtis had showed you little shows like Dixon, of Doc Green, Sergeant Dixon. That was his weekly show. It was a drama. And he was a really good guy. No matter what happened, he'd be awfully lenient to young people and things like that. But he'd go after the bad guys, etc. So you had things like that happening all the time. And then you had programs in Britain and other stations, when eventually other stations coming in, to do with emergency Ward 10, what happened in the hospital. And that made you obedient to the staff, and it made you worship the doctors. That's the function of it. And like Bertrand Russell said, everyone will believe that the best healthcare system in the world because the government keeps telling you so. But yeah, so Curtis went through that. Then he went through the change into the 60s because they decided to alter the culture, reduce the family unit and the power of the family, and promote promiscuity. That's what the sexual revolution was about, for those who don't quite get it. It didn't happen by itself. It was literally promoted from the top, down through all entertainment from the top. And in Britain, especially in the BBC, so it was a government institution run by the people from Eton and Cambridge and so on for the government. So I'm sure every other country went the same way at the same time, with the same format. You see, so getting back, so number one, you create a problem by. Promiscuity, but it's not a problem, is it? You're reducing marriage because the more sex people have with different partners, the less chance it will be of staying with a partner to have children. It does it very well. You also brought in abortions because you had to deal with the fallout from unwanted pregnancies, which became very common, and so on and so on. And at the same time, you put out a music like Bob Dylan telling the parents to don't stand in a hallway, you know, and get out of the way, basically. The times are changing. That was a revolutionary song. Supposedly coming from young people, supposedly, to the older generation and the adults. Get out of the way. You can't criticize what you can't understand. Think about the wording of all that kind of stuff. Huh? Meanwhile, all the children were depending on their parents for money and everything else. But, you know, the children dictate to the parents. And they've rapidly changed society. And I've mentioned it many times, even the last little while, about psychology. And why do you think marketers use psychologists and behaviorists to sell products? Because they understand human nature and they understand the different milestones that even children go through all the way up to adulthood. And that's why all the candies stuck on the checkout counter in checkout stores and supermarkets and so on. Because the child's going through, they know through all countless tests that mums and dads or anybody with children are anxious when you're in a line. Because of a natural tendency, you don't want to be in the way and hold up a line behind you, and the child will start acting up as they grab the candy. It's all within their reach, and you'll automatically pay for it. Okay, then, just to get out of that line up in a way rather than cause a fuss. Psychology, you see. Well, that's what sex is when you say to young folk, when they're just burst into the hormonal range, go and have sex and do what you want. And the state will take care of any problems for you, and even any fallout from diseases. And if they can treat the disease, they will, you see. So children, it's like candy to children, isn't it? That's what they give them. And out of it, they hope, literally, they can do the same across the whole world. Because they're awfully successful with experiments across Europe, very successful, as the country's population start to plummet. And they keep incredible data, awfully accurate data everywhere, on population reduction from the native populations, on marriages even, and all the other programs they brought in too. So different types of groups won't have children at all. The children are coming out of school, putting out slogans. You find that's what Lenin said, do we shall win by slogans. Everything today is a slogan, you'll notice. And so they're prattling, don't eat meat, and also don't get married. You know, no children, save the planet, sustainability. And it's all mantras, it's all these little slogans that they've got. They're given to by adults, of course. So the future's already planned for them. But here we live in a society, and we pretend that we have rights. And we pretend we're in democracies. I've never seen, in a so-called democratic country, the people's advice taken. I've never seen it happen. Or even what they want to happen in a vote. I can remember when the United Nations came out with the super cities idea. They want us all into super cities, according to this governmental system called the UN. That we don't vote for, and they wanted to amalgamate all rural areas and towns and so on. They used to manage themselves awfully well, because only in your area do you who live there know what it really needs done, right? And the further it gets away from, that power gets away from you, the less likely you're going to even get noticed down the road with your complaint. Just like the EU Parliament, it doesn't even see the other countries, really. And so they amalgamated lots of countries, and Toronto was the same in Canada. And they actually gave a vote out for people who really objected. They didn't want to lose their little areas and little places and place names and so on, and to be into some a huge, incredible, again, centralized system, Marxism again, for the economists and those who run capitalism. It's all one thing, folks. And they gave them a vote, and it came out pretty overwhelmingly that to leave it as it was. And so the councillors down in Toronto, Queen's Park and all the rest of them, local politicians and that, they said, well, we know we gave it to you and all that, but we can't really follow through with it. We're going to go ahead and basically ignore your vote, because we didn't have to give it to you anyway. That's what they said in the papers anyway. We didn't have to give it to you anyway, so it doesn't matter. And they ignored it. Something like the Brexit thing too in the UK. Because you truly are living through big global agendas, and they are global, obviously, because what happens in one country generally happens across the planet at the same time in another country, even all the different laws that keep changing. In fact, it's mandatory that you adapt to the changes that happen, say, in Canada and the US before it happens anywhere else. It's mandatory. Across the world, you must adapt and do the same thing. You can't get a loan from the World Bank without going along with a bunch of demands and social changes. That's how it's used today. And it's not to do with just giving food to the poor across the planet. It's implementing social changes. They have the people across the planet shaking their heads like, what? Hey, what? So you're already under a form of governance, as I say. But nothing happens by itself. There's nothing, honestly, you can do electronically that isn't just monitoring you. I got to laugh to an extent at this incredible brush with China and Canada and the US over Huawei, the company, electronics company and communications company from China, because all the top companies, and Intel us too, have used modules and so on from that company. And it was okay up until now, really pretty well, until the US started to get a bit of a spat going with China. And they've got the thing with the China Sea now and China's influence, etc., over there. Interfering with the US over there too, you know. Everybody's like that old song, love that song, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. It's good to play that every, just to remind you what's going on. And all sides are doing it. But remember that China was built by the West. For those who can remember, it's not ancient history, this. Through the 90s, through the trade deals that were all signed through the GATT treaties and different treaties and World Trade Organization, they brought China up to full blast as a manufacturer for the planet pretty well. Just like Karl Marx talked about having one country make all the top goods for, you know, even one factory for this, one factory for all shoes in the world, and one factory. That was a Marxist communist idea. So the big boys, the CFR, Royal Institute for International Affairs, they're behind all the big moves to bring the world together into one system, and to rule it, by the way. And who talk about the invisible government, which is their members across the planet, including the Trilateral Commission as well, who are the real technocrats. But anyway, they built China. We gave them the money. We in the West watched our factories melt away as we're uprooted. And we paid for them to move to China under the treaty. And I lived through it. I watched factories close down one after another. I even knew folk in them who jumped. Sometimes they moved to three factories over a period of about 5 months. And they'd all closed down. Boom, boom, boom. And they'd be moved to China. And we paid. We paid the companies and corporations to move to China. And we paid for what they would claim might be losses as they set up there and got into full swing manufacturing. We guaranteed to pay them for 15 years. They'd have tax-free benefits too over in China. And if they claimed that they still hadn't made what they thought they would have made if they stayed in the country, the original country, we would give them tax-free for another 15 years and more help too financially. We paid for all that as we were left unemployed. I remember it very well. And we've got to remember that not everybody is meant to work on computers. For me, computers are boring things. I really don't want to get into the whys and the wherefores and hows it work. I really don't care how it works, honestly. It's a machine, and if you can do the basic things that I need it to do, that's good enough for me. And I said years ago that the only reason I got one eventually was because people asked me to do a show. That's the only reason. I didn't have one up until then. Because I know what it is, and I enjoy a good book. I enjoy the ability to go through a book and contemplate what I've just read and walk about and think about it, you see. I don't need to just go through distraction after distraction after distraction, click, 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 as I'm being profiled, you see. That's for me personally. And of course it's a great boon for people in business, because they made it impossible to exist today without having them doing anything for business. See, your choices are being taken away. That shouldn't be, you know. If you're free, you have choices and things. And they've been taken away bit by bit by a definite program. By as quickly said, the new feudal system will be the CEOs of international corporations. That's the system that we're bringing in, said Quigley. And they all meet at the World Economic Forum. We didn't set that up either. We'll probably put funding towards it, I bet you, through money from countries. And they really constitute the big mechanism today, along with the big foundations working in the WEF and planning and working the future and training children and future leaders and so on. They probably are one of the biggest ones out there running the show. Your governments go along to them, and we don't elect them in, as I say, those systems. And all the CEOs of corporations attend. Well, here you are. The feudal system. The feudal system. And no one wants to think about it. And again, I keep jumping back to some of the excellent seers of their time who were quite dead on about the future. And that was Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, and George Orwell with 1984. And really 1980, and Animal Farm too, where he predicted a world in Animal Farm. So much of it's coming to true right now, by the way. Read the actual book. Don't just look at the cartoons and stuff. Read the book and you'll find all the things he said would happen. And here they are today, yeah. If you understand it all, analogies, etc. Now, don't think either that I'm bitching about something and bemoaning the loss of the past. The past, really, as I've said before, had its good and its bad points, but really it was also a horror show for most people, I think, for most folk, especially where I lived. And it was always tension. People didn't know even then if there'd be work again. Britain had been through countless wars. That's what they used the people for, countless wars. And they'd been literally starved from the early 1900s through World War One and through the Great Depression and into World War Two, and rationing continued up until the 1950s. And you can see it in the generations what happened to them. Ill and sick and all the rest of it. That was a horror show. And plus they signed deindustrialization pacts with Eisenhower and others. Of course, the Royal Institute for International Affairs was all in the act. And Germany was to be set up as industrial power for this new idea for Europe, all quietly and secretively. They admit this now, that was, so much was done in secret from the public were not to know that this economic trading deal wasn't just a trading deal, but it was to eventually unify the whole, all the countries. Isn't that awful? These democracies, eh? So no, I don't bewail the past. Some of the past was good, where you could have good friends who did more talking one-on-one and real interpersonal talk without computers and or phones, right? You just talked and you met and you talked and you laughed, you know, and things like that. You'd have those times. But a lot of folk literally fell by the wayside because they were written off by the system. They really didn't want them anymore. And all they had was, when they brought in the drugs in the 60s, was drugs or booze, basically. That was alcohol. And that destroyed so many people who saw no future. And again, when Thatcher came in the 80s, well, in the 70s, 70s, through the 80s, she said, there's a generation in her lifetime, growing up in her lifetime, who will never see work in their lifetime. Get used to it. She said in a speech, that's the plan. So you better start taking, I would think, some notice of the system in which you live. Remember, too, that Aldous Huxley said to Wallace on interview, he said that the people will come to love their servitude. That's what he said he was afraid of, because the techniques were so perfect. And youngsters today think it's just fantastic, don't they? They've never had the whole world at their fingertips, really, with the gadgets. And it's all paid for by mum, dad, or somebody is paying for it. They're entertained to death pretty well. They can have all the fun they want in life, the party and sex and so on. It's all, that is the norm now. There's no hush about or even being quiet about it. It's all just promoted everywhere you look. And therefore, you're in a different system already, you see. It took, I don't know, 20, 30 years to bring it to the stage from the, you know. But it's all here and there's no embarrassment. In fact, it's probably risque to even invite folk over today if you have a couple. And another, they might be just kind of wild and it's just too, well, a bit disgusting and not polite talk, put it that way, you know. And when you hear that kind of talk in company, someone's making a play for somebody else, maybe next to you. That's how it works. But everybody knows this. Now, getting back to the Huawei thing in China, as an example, for instance, of what we see is the kind of farces that go on. Canada, apparently, on behalf of the US, with whom they have an extradition treaty, had arrested the financial officer, I think they call it, for that company, who is a daughter of the man who created that company, that Huawei, in order to extradite to the States. I don't think she's been extradited yet, but really, I mean, the stuff that might have been spying in the States. This is the excuse they're using. But China's been manufacturing pretty well all the computers since 2000. What's wrong here, eh? Come on here. Well, they might have backdoors, etc., into different. Well, hey, we've lived through countless stories actually over the years, put out by our own governments on all the backdoors that they mandate must be in all our computers. So is this a fight over who can spy on us or something? I mean, if we're sharing all our data in this global system, what's wrong? Why are you excluding China? Huh? Since China's often making the computers, most of the laptops have always been made in I think it's one factory that makes all different brands in China for us all. And as I say, I don't think there's anything out there that can't be hacked into. I really don't. In fact, so many articles over, that's about all I know about computers, really, is that they're all easily hackable by those who understand what they're doing. I've had different whistleblowers over the years who've gone into in great detail all the different backdoors that are already built in and other ways to come into your computers. And also, you have the same thing with updates on the normal systems that you have too, and authorities often hijack them and jump in at the same time. You can't stop it. So it doesn't make, I don't think it's to do with what they're telling us. It could be, certainly, that someone that's after the whole market, maybe an American company or a friend of America or something like that, there'd be some other reason why this is happening. Because it's big, big money for business, isn't it? And of course, China retaliated by cutting the importation of Canada's canola oil, as an example. And I think 40% of that canola oil from Canada was always deemed for sale to China. So this is how it goes when it comes to big business and power plays and all the rest of it. But as I say, I'm not quite convinced yet that what the authorities have said is the reason is actually the reason at all. I'm going to put up tonight too an awfully good article on Huawei. I was very impressed really by the. It's almost like college campuses are putting up across the world for those to study, people to study and students to study. But so well laid out, and they've copied old architecture, which is user friendly. I can't stand these monstrous modern monstrosities of glass that folk are stuck into. There's nothing I can relate to in them. But you take the old buildings, and they've been awfully, awfully well put up, awfully good. And you got to hand it to them. They understand psychology too, and they certainly can. I'm not praising China. I'm just saying they understand psychology over their own people too, don't they? And they understand what works, and their people works across the waters everywhere else too. Of course it does. But yeah, everybody wants to control everything about us. And don't forget that China was picked, and the UN said it itself. And there were countless documents out years ago lauding China and how it really picked itself up by the bootstraps and so on, and how it was a model state for the world according to the United Nations. Well, nothing's changed. And whether we like it or not, the whole world is planned to be completely unified in a single system. And if it takes 10,000 knots to make it happen, rather than just one big one, they'll certainly do it. It takes a bit longer. Or they can bring it along with threat of destruction, etc. Or again, sustainability, sustaining the planet. But we're all here together. But we're all humans must come together. We're not fighting the UFO invasion. We're fighting the climate change, you see. We're all involved. You see, that's what they chose. Now let's go to some of the articles here very quickly, of course. I'll put these links up, remember, for those who want to follow it. And that's all I do, is for those who are asking the questions. At least I can give them the data as to why things have happened, why things are the way they are. How did we develop until now? What made it happen? Where are the organizations that made it? Where did the planning come from, etc.? How did they implement it into society for changes, etc.? That's what I do. And it stops a lot of people, I hope, from having to go through the hell of killing themselves, youngsters especially, with active brains, knowing something's just wrong with the way things are presented to you, and they don't kill themselves with drugs or alcohol, because that's what will happen to a lot of them if they don't. And there are people who need to know things. It's just their minds are different. It's the way it is. They don't just accept things. Say, oh, well, they want to know. And that's a good, healthy thing. It's just like the Old Testament. You have the Old Testament, too, had people who studied history. Of course they did. And the so-called old prophets used to go up to kings in the Old Testament and dress them down for doing wrongs and so on, because they knew these wrongs would end up no good for the people. You need these old characters, you know, once in a while, to come along and say, hey, wait a minute here, you better think about this might happen, etc. You really do. But we're being trained to believe in experts, like Russell said they would do, and until most folk literally they're brainwashed by pretended experts who are just really as blind as everybody else. They're the blind leading the blind, but they're well paid to lead you along pre-planned paths for their masters, obviously. Anyway, birth strikers, meet the women who refuse to have children until the climate change ends. We'll put that up tonight. And for those who want to see it, this is your propaganda, you see. And it saves the planet and sustainability and all that kind of stuff, etc. And it's all fodder for down the road for social work departments and psychiatrists and therapists who will deal with the people who are just living in hell and depressed because they missed out on things that later on they'll find they might have enjoyed or needed, in fact. Again, it's a good cop-out too, isn't it? When the TED Talks, an article about them, you have twins being studied. Twins are always studied for different things because you get so much information from genetics and so on. But it says two twins with contrasting lives reveal the secret torment faced by millions of women and how some of them are just crashing in the work system and other ones are doing okay, etc., etc. Because we're under so much stress to succeed into things, perhaps, that are really irrelevant to us. We're told to have status, you see, approval. And status, but when so much is piled upon you, maybe it's time you start serving yourself sometimes. Otherwise, it'll destroy you. It's not for everybody. Also, psychiatrists must ask children, they say kids here, but kids are young goats, about social media use. So it dehumanizes them naturally, the terminology. And it says they must consider the impact of social media on all the children they assess for mental health problems. Again, experts say, you know, this priesthood of experts always tell us these things, you see, how we should think and all that. But it's true. They know all this stuff. They know what's going on. They know how we got to be where we are, actually, already. They know this stuff. Cannabis, the wonders of cannabis, of course. You can't listen to any news anywhere on radio or anywhere, on our TV, I'm sure, without the cannabis. How wonderful it is. Because now the big multi-billionaire companies are involved in it, and big wealthy folk are involved in it, and we're advertising it everywhere, aren't we? Mm. Now it's good, and smoke from that's wonderful. Tar is thicker than cigarettes, but they say it's wonderful, the experts, so it's wonderful. There you go. That's your reality today. Member of Parliament Victoria Atkins accused, this is quite an interesting little story, of hypocrisy over legal cannabis farm. This is a Member of Parliament in Britain. And she's a drug minister, right? It says Victoria Atkins has been accused of hypocrisy on a grand scale over her husband's involvement in a legal cannabis farm. And it says Paul Kenward, who is married to the MP for Louth and Hornscastle, is managing director of British Sugar, licensed to grow non-psychoactive cannabis. Well, once you get that, you can get the other one too, you see. And it says the Home Office said Miss Atkins declared the fact in Parliament when she was appointed minister in 2017. Now, she was picked for that position because she spoke out about drugs. But once they start legalising it, everybody gets, they suddenly, they have a change of heart, you know. I've given it more thought, you know. It's amazing how money can just change opinions very quickly. It says Peter Reynolds, president of CLEAR, Campaign for Cannabis Law Reform, said, it's not just a conflict of interest, it's hypocrisy on a grand scale. The reason she was appointed, Theresa May was looking for someone who was a hardline prohibitionist, he said. Well, she had a change of heart, as I say, when her husband said, you know, we can make millions here. It's very persuasive, you know. There you go. So that's one article on it too. And this is another one that's quite amazing. It's in the Daily Mail today. Tory Party as Conservative Party Deputy Chairman's dancer turned barrister, which is a lawyer in Britain, cousin. So this Deputy Chairman's lawyer cousin, but they used to be a dancer, buys a $4,000 acre farm in Sierra Leone to grow and import cannabis after obtaining a license to make drug for use in medicine. It's medicine, for goodness sake. You'd be dancing on that shortly too, I'm sure. But I used to give talks about things you couldn't believe. It's like someone, I've been asked before about Osama bin Laden and so on, you know. I think the man supposedly in different articles and different papers over many years said he was dead about 40 times, at different times too, including the early one where he died because he apparently had bad kidney failure, according to the French at the time. He used to go there to get renal dialysis done and so on. Anyway, I said, I'll believe everything they tell me, I said, when they explained to me that in the US and Canada, all you got for all those years was Osama bin Laden. And then they put in a guy as a president in America called Obama. Obama versus Osama. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, folks. You really can't, can you? You can't. What's the odds of that? What's the odds of that? And then you have Tory party deputy, is this chairman, right, whose cousin buys a 4,000-acre farm. Well, the politician, this politician, James Cleverly, the MP, this guy, that's his cousin, right? James Cleverly, clever as in clever, Cleverly, right? He's a member of parliament for, hold on to this, he's the MP for Braintree, Braintree. Mr. Cleverly is the MP for Brain, as in brain in the head, right? Tree. Who makes this stuff up, right? Huh? And his cousin has been awarded a contract, because I don't know who's dishing out the licenses, but it might even be Britain for other countries too. But it's for medicinal use only, you know. And so there you go. It's amazing. All rights are wrongs and all wrongs are rights. And that's just the age we live in, isn't it? And that was all, again, part, I think, Revelation, wasn't it, in the Bible? And people scoffed at it. But we're living through it. Wrong would be right and right would be wrong, etc., etc. Isn't that something? And the governments that were taught to fear, don't forget, we're taught to fear governments. That's what it, how it runs. Everything's fear. It can just change their mind when it suits them. And the first ones who always get in on the act are those who work for government. Same in Canada, on the big cannabis boards and so on. Huh. But there you go. Mr. Cleverly's cousin, Mr. Cleverly, who's MP for Braintree. Yep, okay. But it's only for, his cousin's only going to have it for medicine, so, you know, that's what it's for, medicine. Also, US officials ordered Chinese company, that's the one too, to sell the popular gay dating app Grindr over security concerns. So it's a Chinese company, I didn't know that either. Don't know what these apps are, but the fact is, they're afraid now. Or maybe it's already out, we'll never know. We'll never really know. Because I know intelligence agencies try to get everything on folks' sexual habits. It's for blackmail purposes. That's what they have always done, eh? This is Beijing Kunlun Tech, a web game developer founded by Zhu Yahu, has been told to sell the dating app over fears the Chinese government could access user data. Everybody, I'm sure, could probably. Every agency in the planet could probably access the user data. I'm sure they could. So the Committee on Foreign Investment envisioned scenarios where personal information could be used potentially to blackmail defense contractors. Interesting, yeah? The company paid $93 million for a 60% stake in 2016, acquiring the rest 2 years later for $152 million, and is looking to get twice the price they paid. So that's the excuse they're using for it. Very old tactic is blackmail, of course, by all countries. They all use it. They'll threaten to expose you to whatever, and that's it. You know, okay, I'll do whatever you want. Acute illness associated with cannabis use by a route of exposure, an observational study. And Andre Monte, MD, PhD, Shelby K. Shelton, they've all got their letters behind them, of course, and they're qualified people. Put an article out, University of Colorado School of Medicine, Aurora, Colorado, and Rocky Mountains Poison and Drug Center, Denver Health and Hospital Authority, etc. Stacks of folk took part in this, here it says. And they got big grants for the investigation, but it says they're tasked with reviewing the scientific literature related to the public health effects of cannabis use and exposure. So they're all getting paid to read. What they claim, and this is such a joke, is they don't have enough data on it. They've been studying this stuff since the 40s, you know, literally. And they know exactly what it does. And even on post-mortem and autopsy, you actually see this. The stuff actually goes into the brain, eh? Into the, where the cerebral spinal fluid will go up into it, and you can actually see the tissue. It's brown, it stays brown forever. And it can actually widen as well, dilated too with it because of it. Anyway, it says that they're really investigating on a big scale because there's so many problems coming up already, which they have to. They probably get more pills out, like they always do with any drug. They bring out stuff to deal with side effects of different drugs. Well, there'll be a whole new industry on when folk get odd side effects, etc. too, you see. But it says to describe and compare adult emergency department visits rate to edible and inhaled cannabis exposure. Because there's a lot of problems with it. It says there were 9,973 visits with an ICD-9-CM or ICD-10-CM code for cannabis use. These are crisis occurrences. Of these 2,567, which is 25.7%, visits were at least partially attributable to cannabis, and 238 of those were related to edible cannabis. So the visits attributable to inhaled cannabis were more likely to be for cannabinoid hyperemesis. That's vomiting, excessive vomiting syndrome that happens in some people because of cannabis. And so they're breaking it all down to see, try to find out what's causing this in them. And the only antidote really so far to this problem they've got is stopping altogether. Once it starts, you'll get it every time you take cannabis. They've got a lot of money involved in this too for the people involved. A mysterious syndrome that makes marijuana users violently ill is starting to worry the doctors. And a new study documented a sharp rise in emergency room visits linked with marijuana following legalization in Colorado. And one of the key drivers of the ER visits was mysterious syndrome characterized by severe nausea and repeated vomiting. So it's the only way to cure it is to stop using it. They say they're still not sure what causes it. And it gives you some people who end up literally getting uncontrollably sick, and then going to a bath, those can scald their skin and so on. They don't even feel it initially. And one person's done it for the third time in a row, and it's because of marijuana use, apparently. Some folk are having seizures with it, nausea and so on, and dizziness, very similar to minor strokes and so for some of them, in fact. And it says, 2004, a team of emergency room physicians in Australia detailed her experience anonymously alongside a handful of similar cases in the same region that year. And nearly all the cases of people described an illness that cropped up suddenly, often after decades of normal marijuana use. And some of them, for the feeling, you know, for that they had with nausea, it says that a piping hot bath sometimes were their only relief. Interesting, eh? And anyway, they're calling it the cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, or CHS. And emesis is like emetic, basically. Or emesis, I suppose, is to do with the whole syndrome, including the rashes and so on. Well, and vomiting. They also get stomach problems, nausea, and then permanent pain, some of them, in the stomach area afterwards. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, there's some articles. I'll put them up for those who want to read them. And if you're using it, it's good to know. At least you can watch out for it. Or you may be able to see other people or your children or friends or something if anything happens. You know, it's put in the right direction if it starts to happen to them so they can get help. You know? And a mysterious syndrome in which marijuana users get violently ill, blah, blah, blah. I have two or three articles on it. Another article I wanted to put up too with, you've all heard about the pay to get into universities, the top universities and Ivy League and all that to set you up there. This is, I'm surprised even bring, it's so common, it's always been common. And across the world, it's very common in some countries. I think it'll get actually worse as more of a rising middle class in some countries appear. They won't think twice about bribery and so on and payoffs to get their all the qualifications in the right universities they want. But there's an article here too about some, I mean, you can pay for whatever you want and going through university if you've got the money, big money. And here you can get your thesis, your PhD thesis written for you too. We'll write your PhD thesis for £6,173. And all the way from actually between £2,559 and £6,173. So there you go. It's pretty widespread across the world, I'm sure. But Britain, British universities are stacked with people from across the planet too, with money, big money. As I say, it's a rising middle class, and they got money to spend. So there you go. This is the rise of robot authors, it says. This is the writing on the wall for human novelists. This is robots now are involved in... and write novels. I knew for a while, ages ago, they were writing small stuff, you know, small stories and stuff. Now they say they're making awfully good ones for stories. But you take that, right? That's computers and getting back to universities. I felt guilty when I got my results. It says your stories of buying S's. Politicians called ministers want to get tough with students who buy, they have to get tough with the ministers who also bought them, who want to buy custom-made work from essay mill websites. And the readers, some of the readers share their experiences. Tens of thousands of students are believed to have bought essays online and submitted them to university tutors, a practice known as contract plagiarism. And last week, Joe Johnson, university's minister, called for new guidance to be issued for the next academic year, including tough penalties for students who buy essays and strong warnings about the consequences. So they're trying to get experts to study them now to find out if they can spot if these are written by for the people and so on. There's a lot more involved in all of this stuff, and that's the way it is, eh? Now, back to this China, US spat, basically. Interesting, you'll see the rah-rah articles, too, off the US. It says the Air Force recently deployed six nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to Europe for theater integration and flying training exercises with regional allies and NATO partners, a move viewed as sending a strong message to Russia. So that's the European part, right? And then they talk about the B-52s. The B-52s have been going forever, you know. And apparently they're going to use them for another up to use 2050. That's the big agenda, big plan there. Interesting, because they're amazing. They must be awfully well maintained all the time, naturally. But another one, US Air Force B-52s participate in large exercise over Norwegian Sea. They put another group back into Britain, into near RAF base in Britain again. They'd all been taken out a while back. Now they're back again, so kind of semi-permanently, perhaps. Who knows? I'll put the article up too. And also, Strato Fortresses, that's the same ones, right? The B-52H Strato Fortress, they call them. They fly sorties over the South China Sea. And it's the first since November, it says here. And so again, Russia and China is big corporations, obviously. Or maybe not so obviously. It might all be a farce for us to believe in, who knows. Eh? I was very sceptical of the so-called Cold War in Europe, to be honest with you. But big corporations make a phenomenal amount of money making missiles and weaponry, which you never have to use, so you don't have to prove it. That's worth the billions that each plane will cost you, or the missiles for that matter. So it's just great profit for the companies who make them. They never had it so good as they did during the Cold War. Anyway, so there you are. They got the articles. They got the help to do with them flying over near China, of course, in the South China Sea, and over Norway to warn Russia, apparently. And it's a new cold. I remember one of the first talks I gave years and years ago, and I was asked about Russia that had suddenly just given up, just like Blast from the Past, you know, and at the end you have the dad saying, oh, he was because he'd been living underground in a shelter all these years. And he was told that it was all over with Russia, that they'd forgotten about communism and dropped it. He says, oh, so this gave up and went home, eh? So the dad was told, oh, it's all over. It was finished. They just gave up. He says, they gave up. It's like that. It's like that, he says. Yeah, that's what happened. And of course, the dad starts pacing out on the surface the plans for a new underground shelter. But I said one of the first shows that if they need an enemy, they'll just resurrect the bad bear again, you see. And that's exactly what's been happening. Governments tend to lose, especially corporations, they start losing a lot of hold over the public. Remember, one of the things that they tell you why you need government is, yeah, you need to keep the peace and so on. If they would all follow it themselves, but they don't. It's a different reality for those up there as the ones down here. And you find that they don't follow the rules that they make you follow. They never do. And yet they want you to believe in democracy. And don't forget that Plato said it himself. He says, there's no such thing as justice. There's only the appearance at times of justice. You know, you must give them a show, but there's no real justice. I think of the generations that have been used and abused by governments down through time, and it's horrific, absolutely horrific story. When you look, for instance, at how bureaucrats, at the stroke of a pen, can change thousands of families' way of living, for instance, traditional way of living, like the farmers across Europe, when they did that with the EU dairy compacts and all the rest of it, put them all under, they put them all under. Families that had been maybe fifth, sixth, seventh generation all went under because bureaucrats decided they couldn't sell the milk and so on where they normally sold it, or butter and like that. That's bureaucrats for you. And it's rather sad. So government is really a different creature than what you think it is. But one of the big holes they have on when it comes to nations is we're here to protect you. Without that big threat, you see, they lose a lot of power over the people, who start to almost demand more freedoms. When it's peaceful, folk will demand more freedoms of different kinds. So you've got to keep something going to frighten the public in order to say, well, I've got to protect you. And they always find something. So I hope we're not in for another 40, 50 years of a Cold War, tit-for-tat kind of trade deal and spite for, they're all spiting each other. And rather, it's better than smiting each other, certainly, but they certainly spite each other. And it's not a good way for being. It really isn't. And we'll never get told the real reasons behind it, but I think it's partly control, and I think it's also big, big, big business, obviously. Kind of sad. And it would be fantastic to live way in the future, just to see how everything across the planet really works out eventually, wouldn't it? And as I say, you won't stop it because it's planned this way. But at least it'd be good to document it, just to see it, to be quite interesting. And life should be interesting, shouldn't it? For myself, Alan Watts from Ontario, Canada, it's good night. I mean, your God or your God school with you.